John chapter 4, verse 5 says, So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, Will you give me a drink? And thus begins what J.W. Shepherd calls one of the most interesting conversations recorded in history. It is the longest recorded conversation we have between Jesus and one person. I'm hoping you'll see two things very clearly as we go through what happened that day. Number one, I hope that you will see again, or maybe for the first time, Jesus's genius. And number two, I hope that you will see that thanksgiving leads to giving. Jesus and his guys heading north on the highway. They need to make a pit stop because when you got to go, you got to go. There are no easy on and off exits on this road, but they see a sign that says famous landmark, Jacob's Well, 3 miles ahead. So even though none of them have ever gone that way before, I'll tell you why in a minute, they take that ramp. Jacob's Well, do you remember Jacob? Jacob is the father of 12 sons. He gave his favorite son a really nice coat. You remember Jacob? He dug a well where God told him to dig a well, and that well gave the best water in the whole country. Later on, his favorite son with the cool coat became the second in command in Egypt, saved the world. And at the end, his dad gave him this well. That guy, Joseph, that we just did a sermon series about. So it's now 1,700 years later, and the guy that God promised to Jacob that he would one day send to save the world has finally arrived. That guy's here, and he's teaching, and he's healing, and he's turning water into wine, and he's causing a ruckus, which is why Jesus and his guys are heading north right now. Jesus had gone south to Jerusalem to be baptized by John. Jesus said he went there to fulfill all righteousness, and he'd asked some guys down there to train with him, and they said that they would, and they were doing great down south, Jesus and his guys. Many people were identifying with them, and like John the Baptist, when people wanted to follow Jesus, they would be baptized into his group. So John's followers are getting baptized, and Jesus' followers are getting baptized. The Bible says Jesus realized that the Pharisees were keeping count of the baptisms that he and John performed. Although his disciples, not Jesus, did the actual baptizing. They posted the score that Jesus was ahead, turning Jesus and John into rivals in the eyes of the people. So Jesus left the Judean countryside and went back north to Galilee. Jesus was not in the south to compete with John. He had come to endorse John's work. When the religious leaders sought to cause dissension between the two groups, Jesus said, I'm out of here, and he headed north. You don't usually see preachers leaving because they're too popular. But that's what Jesus did. He now realizes that if he heads on the way north over to Jacob's well, the religious leaders who are still tracking him won't follow him because that well was right in the middle of Samaria. And good Jews never go to Samaria because there are cooties in Samaria. That's what they thought. Now, Jesus had to go through Samaria, John 4:4 says. He had to go through Samaria. I always thought when I read that verse, right, Jesus had to go through Samaria because he has a divine appointment at a well. But the truth is there were socio-political forces and there was religious intrigue behind Jesus going to Samaria. He's just living life, making best decisions he can make based on what people around him are doing. And all of that leads to Jesus end up sitting by a spring one day on a hot day at noon. I also always assumed that while Jesus was sitting at this spring, he was sitting there by himself, because that's what I've always been taught, and that's what happens in The Chosen. But it seems to me, as I read this week, that maybe John was still sitting there, maybe around on the other side of the well, because John sure tells this like he was an eyewitness to the whole thing. Be that as it may, let's get to their talk. A lady walks up to the well. Jesus is on the ground with his back to the wall. She sees him there, but he doesn't say anything. He's just a guy sitting out at the well. So she attaches her jar to a rope, and she lowers it down 150 feet into the well. She cranks it back up, and when she disengages the jar from the rope, he says, "May I?" Which probably startled, possibly confused, and might have slightly amused this lady. Verse 9 says, "The Samaritan woman said to him, 'You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan. Woman, how can you ask me for a drink?'" Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Remember, they have cooties. I don't know how she knew Jesus was a Jew. Maybe something, maybe facial features, maybe his accent. Maybe she saw the Star of David bumper sticker on his donkey. Somehow she knew He was a Jew, and she was puzzled because what he was doing wasn't done then. Men didn't speak to women in public. Jews and Samaritans hated each other obligatorily. Racial tensions and religious differences, despising and fighting and killing in the Middle East, that is nothing new. There is no way in Sychar a Jewish man would ever talk to a Samaritan woman, much less ask her for something, much less ask her for something as intimate as a drink of water. But she sees he's thirsty and he has no bucket. And she knows that most Jews would rather die of thirst than ask a Samaritan woman for a drink. So she said, "What are you doing, dude? A drink for me? That's crazy." This lady knows the rules and she cannot understand why Jesus isn't following them. Verse 10, Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asked you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." Jesus said, "Oh, ma'am, if you knew God's heart and if you knew how much he loves you and all peoples, if you had any idea who I am and what I can do for you, you would ask me for magic water." And she looks at Jesus and said, "Magic water, huh? What, are we telling jokes now?" At which point she might have said, "Did you hear about the guy who glanced out his window one morning and saw three new deep holes dug in his backyard?" And he said, "Well, well, well." She might have said, "I have a friend who keeps saying I should cheer up. It could be worse. I could be stuck underground in a hole full of water. And I know she means well." She could have said, "I have a friend who couldn't afford his water bill last month, so I sent him a get well soon card." No, what she really said was, "Living water? What you talking about, Willis?" Verse 13, Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And even though this idea is clearly wacko, this guy's saying it so calmly to her, like he really means it. To never be thirsty again, to always have enough, bubbling up and overflowing. Can you imagine living a life like that? To live contentedly, to really be okay with what you have? This lady probably looked long and hard at Jesus thinking, "Yeah, I know I'm being punked. This deal is too good to be true, but this guy's offer is so real. I almost don't want to pass it up." So in the end, she gives in and she says, "Even though I know I'm going to be disappointed, fine, I'll bite." Verse 15, the woman said to her, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." And there it is. She's willing to go with him. She says, "Okay, I'm in. Go ahead. Work your magic." And what does Jesus do? Does he turn the water that she's got in her jar into wine? Could have. Does he introduce the world for the first time to Moen faucets where water flows out hot and cold? Does he make the water spring up from the well like Bellagio fountains with lights and music? Does he pull out a 2 liter of Diet Dr. Thunder and say, "This is going to blow your mind"? She's watching to see what this guy is going to do. He seems so sincere. How is he going to come through on his promise? But instead of anything fancy schmancy, Jesus stuns her with a total non sequitur. She's waiting for water that's going to solve her problems, and he adds another problem. Verse 16, Jesus told her, "Go call your husband and come back." And she thinks, "Wow, wow. Am I ever the unluckiest person in the history of the world? Right before this guy is going to change my fortune forever, he decides to do a bed check. Bad enough that I went for the offer in the first place. Now he's going to club me with a marriage stick. Wow." And she probably picked up her jar of water and she turned to head back to her very sad life in town. And over her shoulder, she said, "Yeah, I guess I don't qualify. I don't have a husband." At which point Jesus calls back out, "That's for sure. You've had five. And the guy you're with now is not your husband." Which probably froze the lady in her tracks, and she turns slowly around. And in verse 19, she says, "Sir, I can see that you're a prophet." Notice, she didn't deny what he said. She didn't try to hide it. She was amazed. Later, she will tell people that Jesus knew everything she's ever done. He has real knowledge of what was going on, had gone on in her life. Once Charles Spurgeon was preaching, And a little girl listening whispered to her mother, "Mom, how does he know what goes on in our house?" That's what this woman at the well realized. Jesus knew what happened at her house. That's what we all need to realize. Jesus knows what's going on in your house. You know that, right? There are really no secrets, none, not really. And some people think this lady then tried to cover up what she didn't want to talk about by directing the conversation to a theological argument. And some people do that. Some people, rather than face up to the stuff in their lives that they need to face up to, sometimes people will want to focus on, say, anything else. So, yeah, I know we shouldn't be sleeping together, but what do you really think about the rapture? So, sure, my addiction is not really good for me or my family, but man, that homosexuality thing, woo. So, right, yeah, I know my next step should be to get baptized, I know that. But what about people in Africa who have never even heard of Jesus? Sometimes people try to shift the attention away from what needs attention right where they are. But I don't think that's true of this lady. Jesus doesn't act like she's being disingenuous. I think this lady realized that Jesus really knew stuff about what really matters, and she wanted to know. So she asked the biggest question that had always bugged her. Are the Jews really right? Does God really only love people in Jerusalem? And Jesus replied in verse 21, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you don't know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit," Jesus said, "and his worshipers must worship in the spirit and in truth." Jesus tells this lady, up to now, yeah, Jerusalem is it. But now God's going to be available everywhere. Anybody can connect with him, anyone. He's opening the door and inviting all people in, anybody, everybody, you, lady, the Samaritans, the Jews, the Palestinians, Hamas, Ukrainians, Russians, Muslims, Hindus, Americans, red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in his sight. You, Christ came to make a way for you to be saved. And the woman said in verse 25, I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, I am he." And suddenly this lady realizes, holy cow, this guy is the guy. It's really him. Did you hear that Chuck Norris was out driving one night and he got pulled over by a police patrol, but they got off with only a warning? Did you hear that Chuck Norris tried to lose weight once, but Chuck Norris never loses? Do you know that Chuck Norris's cowboy boots are made from real cowboys? So in our culture, Mr. Norris has somehow gained the reputation of being the most amazing man ever. To the Samaritans, who all started out as Jews, but then got kind of messed up along the way, Messiah still had that same aura. Here's this lady talking to some random guy at a well when she realizes, whoa, this is him. He's the one. More than that, he's the one, and he's being nice to me. More than nice. He's offering me the answer to my lifelong thirsting. He knows everything about me, and he's still willing to invite me into his world. And when all of that finally hits her, that's when this lady goes cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs crazy. And that's when we get to the part that we read to start today's assembly. This woman takes off for town. It's about a mile from the well into Sychar. And she turns and she runs towards town. She didn't even notice that she dropped her water jar, which is why she came out in the first place, which is another small detail that the Bible includes just for the fun of it. She came out to get water. Jesus asked her for water. They talk about never-ending water. This whole deal is about water. And when she figures out who she's talking to, she takes off running and forgets all about water. She runs into town, and this lady starts grabbing people on Main Street and saying, "You got to come see him. You got to come see him." And they know who this lady is. She's been married to many of their brothers along the way. But they've never seen her acting crazy like this. She keeps saying, "I found him. I found him. I found him." And they keep saying, "Who? Who?" And she keeps saying, "Him. I found him." and she's smiling, and she says, "He's great, he's amazing, he knows everything I've ever done." And they looked at her and said, "Whoa, everything?" And she said, "Everything." And they said, "And you're okay with that?" She said, "You don't get it. He's great. He's smart. He's nice. He's good. Come and see. You got to come and see, please. You won't be sorry. Please. He's out at the well. Come on." And they said, "But you said he's a Jew." She said, "Right." And they said, "Why were you talking to a Jew?" She said, "You'll see." They said, "He knows what you've done?" She said, "Yes, I already said that. He knows it all." They said, "How could he?" She said, "Because he's him." They said, "But he knows your stuff, and that doesn't bother you?" She said, "Would you just come out and see? Just come out. Just come out. Meet him." So they do. They put down their laundry baskets. They put down their carpenter tools. They put down their newspapers and their sandwiches. And they go with her just to see what all the fuss is about. Plus, they've known her for a long time, and they've never seen her like this before. So they head out. The whole town follows her. You know she's leading the way, saying, "Come on, come on, come on. We don't want to miss him. Come on." And she ends up leading the people of Sychar out to meet Jesus. And after they meet him, and after they ask him, "What in the world is that woman talking about?" When they realize that he is indeed as special as she has said, like maybe who she said he is, they invite Jesus to stay with them, and for 2 days, the whole town hangs out with him. After which, they tell this lady, "We went out there because you told us, but now we know ourselves. We have heard him. This man is the man we have all been waiting for all of our lives." And she said, "Right, right. I mean, you're so right." So how do you know when someone really gets Jesus? I mean, it should show, right? Like, did you hear about the lady who was walking down the street when she came upon a beggar? A lady was on the street asking for money. So the first lady walking down the street took $20 out of her purse and she said, "Before I give this to you, how do I know you're not going to use it to buy chocolate?" And the lady on the street said, "Does it look like I've got nothing better to spend it on than chocolate?" And the first lady said, "Well, you might use it for shopping." And the beggar lady said, "No, you don't understand. I need the money to stay alive." And the lady said, "Well, you might just spend it on your hair." Annoyed, the poorer lady said, "No, I need money for food and shelter." And the first lady said, "Well, in that case, I don't want to just give you this money. I want to invite you to eat with me and my husband tonight." And the poor lady said, "Why?" And the first lady said, "Well, I think it's important for my husband to see somebody after they give up chocolate shopping and doing their hair." So obviously, you can look at the way someone lives and draw wrong conclusions about why they live that. But there is a thing that happens to people when they feel the impact of Jesus' genius in their lives. Almost every time, when somebody gets a sense of who Jesus really is, when Jesus comes into focus and gets real for somebody, there is a reaction that seems pretty connected to experiencing him every time. And you can see it in this lady from Sychar. She came out to draw water at noon in the heat of the day by herself. She did not come out early or late with the other ladies in the group like most ladies did. She had watched 5 marriages end. She was currently living with a guy who she wasn't married to. She was very aware of her racial and her gender disadvantages in life. Mostly this lady did not fit anywhere. But after she spent a little time with Jesus for real, she could not be stopped. She ran back towards the same people she had snuck out of town to avoid. She wanted them to talk about her now. She had never wanted that before, but now she wanted to be the center of attention in the town. She wanted to help other people find what she had found. She wanted to give something back to all those people. And when people I know have come to understand that Jesus is great, they get giveful. It seems generosity is the outward display of the inward experience of Jesus' goodness in your life. Let me tell you about another lady. This lady went for a week's vacation and she really hurt her back. I mean, this lady never complains about anything. And she asked to be taken to ER 3 times in 5 days. And she moaned and she groaned and she cried and she said it hurt a lot. And anytime you talk to her, she said it hurt a lot. So her church friends prayed for her, asking God to help her through somehow, which led eventually to a hospital worker friend of hers getting her into ER, where a doctor finally said, "Wow," and gave her morphine, which helped a lot. And one of the persons who were praying for her said, "Ah, the power of prayer and morphine." But the hurt still lingered, and it seemed like it was going to be weeks of agony and recovery. In fact, she hurt so bad she didn't think she could push the buttons on the remote to watch live stream today. until an appointment was set up with a chiropractor that she knew from before, and he saw her, and he did his magic, and he made Mom better. Like dancing a jig better. Like, John, I think I'm going to come to the church gathering today. No, you're not, Mom. Yes, I think I can. No, you're not. Like she sent me a text when she got back in town after the chiropractor that said, home, it is well. Mom says that Tim Kennedy was made to be great at what he does by God, and she likes them both, Tim and God. Mom was so happy on the way home that she stopped at a great restaurant, went out of her way to stop at a restaurant that we both know, and buy me a piece of pecan pie just because she was so happy that I helped her while she was hurting. It seems like the truth is when people are generous, when people are thankful, they become generous. And my parents live thankful lives because they've always thought that God has been good to them. When you're thankful for being given something good, the natural reaction is to be generous back. When you feel truly grateful, giving kind of comes out of you. That's why we tip people who serve us well, and we're happy to do it. That's why we say thank you, thank you, thank you when somebody does us a solid. I got a text from Lauren Murray, who is the director of the Classical Conversations homeschooling group that meets here, and she said, our family was blessed to win the Amherst tickets at your fall fest. We brought another Classical Conversation kid with us. If you know the donor, please pass along our thanks, 5 exclamation points. Linda and Carice and I sat out at a fire in our front yard on Halloween handing out candy, and when little kids came up and then when they seemed genuinely grateful, when little kids say, wow, thank you, it made us want to give them more candy. I know a guy who hung out with the church and he listened and he learned and he pondered, and one day it hit him. He got it. God loves him. In spite of his messed upness, God still thinks he's great, so much that he thinks that Jesus was willing to go to the cross to give him a way to get good. He really got that. He felt loved. He realized he couldn't be good enough. That's not the deal. But he could sign in on Jesus' account. Jesus was willing to pay so that he could be in. And when he finally got that, this guy, when he finally let that all wash over him, he asked somebody if they had baptized him. And when he came up out of the water smiling, this is the first thing he said. He said, I feel like I've just been let in on the biggest secret in the world. And I can't wait to tell people. Does that sound familiar? Does it sound like a lady running away from a well, jarless but thrilled? If you're given something good and you're grateful, it increases the generousness in you towards others. I mean, really, why wouldn't we do this? People who actually have a grace experience, people who actually run smack into Jesus's greatness, they tend to want to share that goodness with other people as much as they can. One writer said, one evidence of true conversion is a real zeal to lead others to your Savior. And not just the urge, the actual act of helping others see his genius. So how about it? Here's my request for this week, at least once this next week. How about you go farther? When you're talking with somebody about life and the opportunity shows itself, take it more than you normally would. Dare to go a little more out there this week, at least one time, more than you regularly do. Just gently push the boundaries, but at least once this week, see what happens. Tell someone something great about who Jesus is, what he means to you, what he does, what he can do for them. Take the chance and tell them. And if you do that a lot, great, go a little further this week. I was playing pickleball. I was waiting my turn to play. I was talking to a guy. He's a good guy. He's a good player. I enjoy him. He started telling me about cryptocurrency. I thought, okay, I like you. I'll listen for a while. He told me how it could change my life. I listened. I said, that's very interesting. When it was time to play, I said, yes, let's go play. Later, I was waiting my turn to play, and I happened to be standing next to his wife, who is a great lady, one of the most joyful people on the courts. Everybody loves her. She's a good player. Everybody loves playing with her. I said, tell me your story. How'd you get to be you? She said, what? I said, you're so nice. You're so beloved. You're always so upbeat. Everybody loves playing. How'd you get that way? She said, I guess lucky. She said, I had a great mom. And I think I was born with happiness inside. I'm just lucky. I said, well, yeah, but sometimes life is hard. Everybody has hard parts in life. And she goes, oh, yeah, we've had some really rough patches. But even then, I just chose to be positive. She said, actually, I think I've got a lot of the spirit in me. I said, yeah, I think you probably do. I said, what church are you part of? And she said, well, I'm not right now. I said, really, why not? She said, just not. And then it was time to play. As I was about to drive home that night, I saw this couple talking to somebody in the parking lot, and I went back into the parking lot, and I swung around, and I drove over, and I rolled down my window, and I looked at her, and I said, you really ought to be part of a church. And I know a good one. And she said, I bet you do. I said, we have a pickleball section. People from pickleball come and sit together. She said, I'm sure you do. I said, I would love for you to meet our church. She said, maybe. And I really hope that she will. Her husband leaned over while I was saying all that and said, I'm trying to get her to come all the time. I have help I don't even know about. So good. I hope you get to meet her someday. But how about this week? If you do this a lot, great. Go a little farther. If you never do this, but you know that Jesus is great, try at least once this week. Say something to somebody about how great he is in a conversation this week when you're led to. This lady did, and a whole city decided they wanted to follow Jesus. Who knows what might happen if you were to give somebody a chance? If he's great and you know that, express your thanks by sharing his good. Say thanks. Be giving. Let's pray.